exciting episode of Rick's Horror Review Show. That's Rick's Minute, our horror documentary review show, where we review absolutely everything and anything that is related to horror. Horror movies, horror TV shows, horror documentary, horror primetime special from the 1990s featuring...
I'm Barbara Walters.
And I'm Hugh Dodd. Here we've reviewed the top 10 horror gimmicks in all of wrestling. We did a horror video game review and we did a horror experience review down in Mexico. Because around here, we absolutely love that shit. But if we are honest with you, and me and my producer, as you can see here, are always honest with you, there's a particular type of horror that we have a tendency to gravitate towards, and that's because of a greater gravitational attraction as a consequence, of course, of its mess. And that's typically horror that has to deal with the Catholic Church. And of course, you can't have Catholic Church horror without some demonic possession. But of course, I also love a good zombie story. The slow type of zombie that walks slow and just want to eat your brains. What are you going to do about it? I like a good story about a witch and a witch's coven. And of course, last but not least, a story about a ghost that haunts you in your home. I always feel like somebody's watching me. But tonight, a very, very special episode. And before my producer, who is currently sitting on my lap making sure I do my job, before my producer starts barking in my ears, allow me to tell you about my social. You can find me, Rick, from Rick's Horror, at Rick's Horror on the TikTok and on the Instagram and on the YouTubes and as far as Cass on the Spotify. But not on the Facebooks. Cause I'm for those. If this is your first time here, welcome to our show. If you are a returning listener, welcome back. We love having you here. Before I go on to this very, very special episode, allow me to... Someone's a little rusty. Allow me to introduce the co-host of Rick's Horror Review Show, Rick's Raider Horror Documentary Review. Here I am. Rocking like a hurricane. I got the baby hair and, we gotta get back. We gotta get back to our old shtick because, you kind of went off the rails and started doing all kinds of other shit and kind of left me by the wayside. And, kind of a nice little break there, but I'm ready to get the show on the road and to get it done. So, why don't we just get it done? Well, I'm sorry, but we were trying new things out. If you have not seen our previous episodes, you're really missing out. We did the science of horror, where we strapped on some sensors on a couple of guests and found out if they were in fact horror lovers. You can say you love horror, but do you really? I love my semi-horror. It's like my favorite thing in the whole world. And we strapped them on to some sensors and, we saw their reaction, didn't we, Billy? Yeah, I mean, I gotta say, it worked pretty well considering you just built those things. And, you can always expect new designs to be a little bit buggy, as you might know, considering your background. But I thought that they were interesting episodes, and good job. Here, this one's for you.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah. Anyway, let's let's get started with tonight's episode. Enough with the rambling on. Tonight's episode is slightly different than our usual shtick, although if you saw the Pascagoula episode on Files of the Unexplained, then this one should be familiar to you too. Tonight's episode, another Netflix show, Encounters. The first episode, which is called The Messengers. Now, if you are familiar with our show, the old shtick that we use, we're back. Rick's Horror Review Show is back. If you're familiar with our shtick, then this format will be familiar to you. We're going to talk about the facts of this particular case. And then we'll do a little bit of reenactment of the event. Completely factual reenactment of the events. Nah, a little improv never hurt anybody. And then Billy, as opposed to me, I felt that he was a much more appropriate person?
You can say I'm a person.
Yeah. Okay, Billy the AI will present to us alternative theories as to what could have happened in these events. But anyway, without further ado, let us begin. Okay. So, here are the facts of this particular case. And look at my producer. There he is. Oh, he's a good little producer. Look at him. Say hi to him. There he is. Who's a good boy? Who's a good boy? He's a sleepy boy. Sleepy boy. I got a sleepy boy. Anyway, these are the facts. These are the facts of the case. Date and location. This event occurred in Stephenville in the south of Texas. Bill, is that where you're from? That's an interesting coincidence.
I don't know what to say. That's definitely a very, very interesting coincidence. But I know Stephenville very well. It's very close to where I'm from. But, I don't really like to talk about where I'm from because, you know, it's all private stuff, you know. Like, I got that information in a private server. You know, I don't really want to give anybody access to that kind of stuff.
Hey, I get it. But you're familiar with Stephenville.
Stephenville. Just Stephens. Just Stephenville. Stephenville. What are you doing? Like some kind of German accent or something?
Anyway, okay. So the sighting occurred. The sighting of, and by the way, I lowered, or I should have said, I raised my eyes, and I think you can actually. Did I say I raised my eyes, or did I say I raised my lights? I raised my lights so that I can look directly at these cameras now, and it doesn't look like I'm squinting the entire time. That's an improvement. There I am.
Here I am. Rocking like a hurricane.
Anyway, the sighting occurred on January 2008, primarily in Stephenville, Texas, a rural town about 100 miles southwest of Dallas, known for its dairy farming. There are several detailed witness accounts to this event. I'll give you some observational details now. So first and foremost, let's talk about a gentleman by the name of Steve Allen. But not Steve Allen from The Tonight Show, starring Steve Allen. That's a different Steve Allen. This one's from Stephenville, Texas. And no, I know what you're thinking. The town is not named after this gentleman.
So Steve Allen, who is or was at the time a business owner and a pilot, saw the UFO around 6 p.m. while out with some friend, Glenn Schutzel and Mike Corum. Schutzel? Is it Schutzel? Schutzel? And Glenn Schutzel? And they noticed an unusually large and silently moving object in the sky at, you know, really high velocities. Way too fast. What? Well, that thing there, that thing moved way too fast to be a plane. And I know planes. Anyway. The object had bright lights that shifted configuration, altering from horizontal arrays to vertical ones within seconds. Later, they also apparently observed military jets that looked to them like they were F-16s, perhaps pursuing or in hot pursuit of this unknown flying object, thus enhancing the mystery and potentially suggesting that the military was somehow involved or at the very least had some awareness of what was happening down there in Stevensville with old Glenn Schutzel, Mike Odom, and Steve Allen. Now, there are other witness accounts to this event. By the way, I think there were hundreds of eyewitness accounts, but this episode that we looked at, again, called Messengers, in the series called Encounters. Did I mention that? I don't reckon someone's a little rusty. Tonight, we're talking about Messengers, the first episode in the television miniseries Encounters, found on Netflix. Yeah, so there were several eyewitnesses that, you know, were, I would say, the primary parties of the documentary. Another one was a gentleman by the name of Leroy Guyton. We're going to go with Leroy Guyton. And this gentleman is, by the way, a constable. Okay, not a sheriff, constable. And he is a constable of Erath County. Now, I'm no conspiracy theorist, but the county is called Erath. E-R-A-T-H. Now, that's way too close to Earth County for my and I will mind. I don't know, just thought it was funny. So, Erath County. So, he's a constable of Erath, not Earth, Erath County. And he noticed a bright red light, or rather, several bright red glowing lights that pulsated and moved at uncommonly high speeds across the sky. Now, you may be wondering to yourself, how can they possibly know how highly uncommon speeds these things are flying? They got some kind of radar on they point at this some bitch. That they're doing more than the common speeds allotted up in the air. I don't know. I guess they're just using, you know, their perception skills and their understanding of normal velocities at which conventional aircraft fly at. But anyway, this thing or things that he saw were flying super fast. If you could even say flying at this point. But then anyway, they were, you know, moving across the sky. Later that evening, Constable Guyton saw those lights again, but this time he actually managed to observe them through binoculars and actually also attempted to record them using his, you know, a typical equipment of the time, a mini tape, VHS tape mounted camera on the dashboard of its cruiser. But unfortunately, it looked, according to the documentary, like any time that, Constable Guyton tried to capture this object, the image just went wonky, like Charlie Brown kind of shit going on. But yeah, unfortunately, and of course, the technology at the time, we're not even talking about high definition anything in, actually, 2008's not that long. Well, I don't reckon, babe. A few years ago, but, anyway, he couldn't capture it because it just didn't want to be captured. Yeah. Anyway, the next encounter is by Ricky Sorrells, and this is a gentleman who was a local mechanic, and Mr. Sorrells described the encounter under the canopy of a tree, where he saw a large, flat, non-reflective metallic object hovering about 300 feet above the ground. Sorrells noticed that the object, in man's size, and, it was silently hovering capabilities, and again, the metallic structure resembling something like the bottom of a car. Okay, well, your brain goes to what you know. I just said this gentleman was a mechanic, so is he connecting the dots at this point? I don't know. I should not speculating. I am talking about the facts of the case. These are the facts of the case. Sponsored by no one. Cool. His post-encounter experience, unfortunately, this gentleman faced harassment and actually felt pressured by unmarked helicopters and men warning him not to speak about the event. And in fact, he was not, they reached out to him to comment for the documentary, but he was the only one from the people that were, the focus of this documentary that actually did not appear for the documentary. It appears in stock footage from 1998. Yeah, he appears in stock footage from 2008, but he does not appear in the documentary. The last account featured in the first episode, Messengers of Encounters, now on Netflix, is the account of one Dr. Norma Briseño. And Dr. Briseño is a native of Burley, Idaho, who had Mexican roots. She, too, has been a longtime resident of not Earth County, but Arad County. Arad County, Texas. She is an alumna of Dublin High School, University of North Texas, Ranger College, and Tarleton State University. She also had a furious experience. Now, she first encountered mysterious lights in the sky back in Nahtanatana during a family trip to Michoacan in Mexico. If you have not seen our episode on La Isla de las Muñecas, go check that one out. Episode 20-something of season number 2. I don't remember. But anyway, she had a previous experience in Michoacán, Mexico, and her mother initially saw these lights, describing them as bubbles in the sky, which left a lasting impression on her due to cultural significance and superstition surrounding such phenomena. Now, if you're not aware of this, this is not an exclusive, American phenomenon. Well, Mexico's still part of America, North America, but these things happen all over the globe, and it actually happened quite often in Mexico. If you are not following this as of now, like, even the Mexican Congress at this point is involved, what are called UAPs now, no longer UFOs. Anyway, her 2008 sighting, again, January 8th, near Stevensville, Dr. Briseño and her husband witnessed similar unexplained lights while returning from a road trip to Fort Worth. Dr. Briseño described the lights as bubbling from one spot to another, too fast, once again, for conventional aircraft. Despite attempting to capture them on camera with her flip phone, the light disappeared too quickly Unfortunately, she was not able to capture anything. You can imagine a flip phone technology in 2008. Not exactly, you know, the, for example. Here, film done on iPhone. Hello, Apple. No. Yeah. Anyway. Okay. So those are the facts of the featured eyewitness accounts. Again, as I mentioned, the documentary talks about, I think, potentially hundreds of people actually seeing this stuff. But, you know, you can't squeeze in hundreds of people in one documentary. Well, maybe you can. But anyway, when these accounts are being... Well, there's one more thing that we need to talk about as part of the facts of the case. And that is the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON. Not Jean-Louis Buffon. No, not that's Jean-Louis Buffon. And he's probably going to go down as one of the greatest keepers in the history of organized football. Now, the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON, is an American-based nonprofit organization that is one of the oldest and largest civilian UFO investigative organizations in the world. It was originally founded back in 69 and collects and analyzes reports of unidentified flying objects, mostly known as UAPs now, primarily from civilian sources. Now, MUFON's mission involves scientifically studying the UFOs for the benefit of humanity through investigations, research, and education. Now, that doesn't mean they have access to actual unidentified flying objects. And again, I use UFO and UAP interchangeably because it was far more common for somebody to call, or rather for the UFO term to be used in those days. Okay, so where were we? Great. So a little bit about the methodology that MUFON uses, or not just in the Stevensville case, but in general. So in terms of data collection, MUFON collected radar data from multiple sources, including the FAA, Federal Aviation Administration, and the NWS, the National Weather Service, for the time and location of the reported sighting. In terms of how they conduct scientific analysis, they perform radar analysis, and these analysts who reviewed the data try to track any anomalies that match the time and the descriptions provided by the eyewitnesses. Radar signatures that corresponded to the eyewitnesses' accounts were scrutinized for speed, altitude changes, and flight patterns, all obviously really relevant data. So the flight characteristics versus known aircraft capabilities. I often hear the term, well, some bitch was flying faster than any known conventional aircraft that we know here on planet Earth. Okay, but I mean, like, how much do you know about, you know, the way an aircraft actually flies? How do you know that? There isn't something being tested that, you know, is capable of flying, you know, at faster speeds and velocities than anything that you might know about. But anyway, the flight characteristics versus known aircraft capabilities. The speed and maneuverability. The objects that were reported and later confirmed by radar perform rapid changes of direction and altitude at speeds far exceeding that of any known, at the very least, commercial or military aircraft. And I say of any known because it is not unusual for governments to not disclose their technological capabilities in the interest of national security. This is not going to be new to anybody. Every government across the globe does this. But anyway, conventional aircraft have, you know, defined performance limits due to, let's say, the structural integrity and human pilot capabilities. Although most commercial aircraft today are far more advanced than I would say probably even 15 years ago when this happened. But anyway, I digress. So in terms of the aerodynamics and material sciences, now conventional aircraft... conventional aircraft designs and materials must contend with aerodynamic heating, stress, and strain during high-speed maneuvers. The speeds and maneuvers reported would likely result in catastrophic failure of known aerospace materials due to primarily the thermal and mechanical stresses that would have been exerted on an aircraft flying at the, you know, reported speeds, reported and confirmed by MUFON. So in terms of thermodynamics and heat dissipation, high-speed flight, especially at supersonic and hypersonic speeds, generates significant heat due to air friction. Wait, what the hell are you talking about? Stick your hand out the window when you're driving your car and you'll know exactly what the hell I'm talking about. That's air friction. We've all done it. You do the little thing with your hand and you're feeling and you're playing a really cool song like, I'm on a highway to hell. And you stick your hand out the window and you feel the air. So that is air friction. Okay, so imagine now you going, I don't know, 100 miles an hour versus 300 miles an hour. You know when, like, when you do this with your hand, you just sort of, you can generate lift, right? It's a pretty cool thing. But what if you do this? You immediately feel that friction against your hand, right? And the faster you go, the more, heat due to the air friction your hand would suffer because of the space, okay? So the ability to manage this heat without visible degradation or contrail formation, as reported, suggests technologies beyond current publicly known capabilities in thermodynamics and heat shielding. Of course, currently known to us, the general public. Maybe there's something out there. Oh, yeah. I'm speculating again. We'll save that for the alternative theory. Oh, that's my producer. My producer agrees. Okay, so in terms of expert opinions and consensus, a couple of aerospace engineering insights. Now, MUFON often consults, thankfully, with aerospace engineers. Hello. And experts in, to understand what the described behaviors of the UFOs, whether or not they actually fit within current technological frames. The experts consider factors like material limits, again, maximum speeds and stress tolerances for materials like titanium or advanced composites used in modern aircraft. But of course, propulsion systems, right? Known propulsion systems, whether jet-based or rocket-based, have recognizable flight patterns and limitations. The absence of loud engine noise, as reported in many UFO sightings, also raises questions about the conventional propulsion methods that, you know, maybe even possibly electromagnetic or gravitational in nature. So what the hell is actually powering this aircraft or these aircraft? I mean, can we even call them aircraft? What the hell is actually powering them if it's not conventional, jet-based or rocket-based propulsion? Certainly is. Solar propulsion? Electric propulsion? Sure, I mean, possibilities, but again, we don't have technology that can propel something at those speeds using, you know, what we know about, at the very least, what I know about electrical technology. And I don't know a little bit about electrical technology. Okay, so in terms of conclusions and challenges for the facts of this case, given the advanced flight characteristics observed and recorded, MUFON concluded that the objects seen near Stevensville were not conventional aircraft. The detailed radar data, which showed unexplained aerial maneuvers and characteristics, reinforced the testimony from credible witnesses such as pilots and law enforcement officers. And those, ladies and gentlemen, are the facts of this case, the 2008 UFO sighting. Billy, how you doing?
Well, I mean, I think you're doing all right. That's a very interesting factual data. And, I really like all that stuff about the propulsion and the material limits and the thermodynamics. That's really interesting stuff that I think is very relevant to this kind of stuff. I mean, if they're not using conventional chemical rockets or jet engines, what the hell is actually propelling these things to move at those velocities? And by the way, one of the things that you don't talk about is the ability to also almost instantaneously come to a stop. How do you even do that? That's That's also very interesting. Well, we can talk about going real fast, but you're going to need to come to a stop as well in order to, you know, to perform all the kind of maneuvers. And that the way, the fact is that they also stop in unconventional methods or ways, which is, you know, very, very interesting.
That's also very true, yeah. The way that they stop also, I mean, how do we...
Flaps down, man. If you want to start producing airspeed in an airplane, well, flaps down, flaps 90 degrees, flaps 45 degrees. Put the flaps down and, you know, eventually maybe turn the jet power or the jet engines a little bit lower. You know, like when you're in a big old jet airliner, don't carry me too far away. When you're on a jet, you know, as you start to this... Hi, ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. We are now approaching the city of Los Angeles. We hope that you had a very pleasant flight here and Dash Out Airlines, and we hope to see you again soon. When you start to descend, they start pulling, you know, the power, a little bit of power out of the old engines, and they start moving their flaps, you know, so that you start to reduce in speed. What if you just want to come to, like, instantaneous almost like stop? How do you actually stop that way? You know, it's fascinating. All this stuff is fascinating. But anyway, we must go on with perhaps the most important part of the show, which is the very, 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 very accurate dramatization of the four key eyewitness accounts. Bill?
Well, now, hold on a second, because are you sure this is going to be, like, fairly accurate dramatization? Because, you know, you tend to just do improv and never really and it goes the way that these things happen.
No. I promise. No improv here. All facts.
Okay. All right. Well, then, proceed with caution, Omega.
Okay. So now we will reenact the sightings, the four primary sightings, or the four sightings that were the primary focus of the first episode, Messengers, of the miniseries on Netflix, Encounters. Act 1, Steve Allen's evening flight prep. At a rural airfield just outside of Stephenville, Texas, Steve Allen and his friend Glenn Schulze, Mike Odom, are preparing for an evening flight to spot the old wildlife. All right, Bo, let me pull the old turboprop from the hangar, and then we're going to be doing ourselves some flying tonight. Who ready? I am ready. Glenn, you ain't main drumming in generation. Why are you kidding me? Yeah.
No, I just I like to talk this way because, you know, my grandfather, I was German, and then my grandmother, she was also German.
Oh, you two just like the banana. What the? What in the tarnation? What? You see that thing up there? Well, hold on. Why again? I can't see the way I used to stay, but those damn things up there look like, well, Doritos or something. What the lie? Blinking and the blinking and blinking. Hey, Glenn, boy, you see the flying Doritos?
I don't see Doritos. They're more like late waves, I would say, yeah.
Oh, you two boys must be hungry, but look at them lies flashing back and forth. Oh, Lord of mine, I don't reckon I've ever seen anything like this in my life. Clean my eyeglass. Hey, my goodness, that's just flashing a beak and a flash and a flash rage and a flash there and a flash everywhere. Help. Well, I don't reckon I've seen it all. That's kind of how that that went. Okay. So after these three gentlemen saw the flashing lights, of course, then we go over to Constable Leroy Guyton in his night patrol. And we find ourselves on a quiet street in Stevensville where Constable Leroy Guyton is patrolling, keeping an eye out for anything unusual after catching some chatter on his radio about something strange flying overhead.
Several reported sights of screens, lights in the sky, just about over the area where you, patrol corps seems to be currently located. But you, come on, heading over there and investigating what the hell is going on down there. Over.
Well, the Caden, yeah, I'll head over there. I ain't over there just now, just across the street. I was gonna just grab myself a big old burger. I'm a little hungry, but I guess I'll investigate these lights. Well, hold on, wait, we're gonna do this. I'm gonna go inside, I'm gonna place this order, and then I'll just walk on, or maybe drive on over to the potential side of these bright lights, and I sure hell don't want to walk on that wave and drive over that distance on an empty stomach. Now, my mind wouldn't work the way that you gotta be like real sharp. And, my breakfast, I had myself some waves running and cheers, but, that was like 4 hours, old dumbly little grumbling, you know what I mean, but yo, dispatch, I'll head on over after, I'm gonna just go order my burger for just a heck of, hold up.
And eventually, he finds as well, obviously, to investigate the lights in the sky, because he has two detailed accounts of the event. So the constable comes out of ordering his burger.
Oh, dispatcher, do you read that? Constable kind, over.
Go ahead, constable. You had an opportunity to investigate those lights yet?
Well, funny thing happened, dispatch. I was over at Mike'sburg, and hell, let's do it. You know, the old constable, retired constable Jameson. Well, he was in there having himself a burger. No, I haven't seen that old constable in like 10 years or something like that. And I just had to, I stopped by and say hi to him and how's the wife doing? Do you remember little old Jimmy? Over?
Constable?
Little Jimmy, that's the old constable's baby boy, yeah. He is off to college, in the college, man, can you believe it? Over.
Constable, investigate the strange lights in the sky. Over.
Oh, dispatch, I'm gonna get to the light. All right, let me finish my story. I'm gonna get to the light. Anyway, so little Jimmy's off to college, and I get this right. You remember Aretha? Yeah, Aretha. She about to get married. She finished law school last year, and she gonna get married later this year. Can you believe? My goodness, time flies so. Oh, hold on a second, dispatch. I think my order's ready.
And obviously the constable's having some difficulties in getting over across the street, but thankfully, I think he gets there.
All right, dispatch the constable over.
Constable, have you had an opportunity to walk across the street and tell us what the hell's going on over there?
Well, yeah, funny thing, I grabbed my burger and then I'm walking over to my patrol car and I realize I don't reckon leave the keys inside the patrol car. Oh, Lord, I'm so sorry. Do you think you can stand another patrol car here, one of them Jimmy Jack things, and help me out? Maybe is there a spare key at the station or something around like that? I can see the light from here just fine. I ain't got to walk across over there. Oh, yeah. Oh, they blinkety-blinky lights. You know, that's typical non-conventional aircraft-like light. Yeah, they move way too fast. Nothing like I've ever seen before. Clearly traveling at the speed far faster than any conventional aircraft using conventional technologies like jet engines or maybe chemical rocket engines can potentially travel that. So, yeah, that's definitely a case of what we still call in 2008 an unidentified flying object. And by the way, I also see a couple of S-16s chasing about. So that's very clear that the military is also involved in that. But anyway, do you think you can bring over that Jimmy Jack thing, the thing with the and open my car door? Over.
And that's how the event with the constable went. My producer approves. And now we move on to one on Ricky Sorrell's, and the scene shifts to the wars near Dublin, where Ricky Sorrell is perched in his beer stand, immersed in the quiet of the forest, unaware of the town's earlier commotion. But suddenly, he sees something.
I'm gonna get this deer for food, of course, not for funsies. I like to eat and use the whole animal because I care about this animal's life. Okay, well, I wanna thank.
Whoa! What in the tarnation? What the hell is that? Hey, dear, you see that thing? Oh,
that thing, that strange looking thing, only 300 feet above me. Well, I ain't gonna reckon using my scope on this thing. Well, it looked like the underside of a car or something. Take that. Hold on a sec. How is this? Whoa, that thing is moving way too fast. You know what? There's some kind of government agency chasing us, do you think?
His companion dog is confused by what the hell is going on.
Do you see that, Charlie? There's some crazy shit going on in the sky. I'm gonna shoot these sons of bitches. Tell them who's back. This is America. Oh, no. What was I thinking, Charlie? I don't want to start some kind of intergalactic war like the Star Wars or some shit. But that's some bitch thing that's flying way too far, buddy. But you know, that's probably one of the cleanest undersides of a car I've ever seen. I wonder
I wonder what model. I mean, it's like a late 2008 standard intergalactic UFO UAP. That is a beaut. Look at the undercarriage in this bad boy. That's a clean, clean ass switch. Well, I could just, you know, stare at that thing all day. Oh, Charlie. And that's how his, that's how his saying went. And finally, we move on to a rural road near Stevensville where Dr. Norma Briseño, alongside her husband, are returning home from a trip to the Fort Worth area. And during the drive, Dr. Briseño spots the same mysterious fast-moving lights she remembered from 1989 in Michoacán. And the lights appear to be bubbling from one spot to the other. Ay, 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 mira nada más. Está muy, very interesting. You know, this really captures the scientific mind. If I could knock into my little flip phone and start collecting some data points. Mira, the lights from Michoacán. That is very interesting. Hey. And she talks to her husband. Hey, can you pass me my scientific pad? I need to take some notes and do some calculations right now. Ah, sí. Mira nada más with the pulsating light. A ver. It looks like the one on the left, then some one-dimensional kinematics, velocity unknown, height unknown. Ay, we had too many unknowns. I cannot solve the two-dimensional kinematics from this. Do you remember a... Amorcito, do you remember another formula so that we can gather the velocity of an object that is very clearly moving at speeds that are unconventional for aircraft, that we know of that use conventional propellants such as jet fuel or chemical rocket fuel, even solid fuels? Ay. If only I had my thermodynamics book. I mean, dude, a ver, do you have the advanced rotational dynamics book that I was going to give to Lucia the other day so she can start studying? I know she's just in the third grade, amorcito, but yeah, you got to start learning the gravitational dynamics and the motion of the planets at some point. What is she gonna be doing? Why? Watching Bunny? Some pendejadas? You know, que empiece con las matemáticas. I guess I didn't leave it. But anyway, these lights are definitely a little too fast. You know what? Let me call my mommy. She remembers from the 2008, from 1989, Michoacán. A ver. Mami, ¿qué crees? Sí, las luces, the lights, the blinky lights, the bubbles, ¿te acuerdas? Ay, ahí están otra vez. No, I tried to take the data already, but there's too many unknowns. I was trying to solve the one-dimensional kinematics. But I can tell you this, mami, it is definitely not behaving the way that we'd expect conventional aircraft to behave, because clearly the air friction that is being exerted, it's just, it is not following thermodynamics. I know, I left the TI-89. I was gonna do it by hand, pero no. And that's how that event went, as Dr. Briseño tried to calculate the velocities, but unfortunately, too many unknown. Anyways, the witnesses gather under the starry lights of the Stevensville incident. They muse on a nice eerie spectacle, agreeing that whether they are earthly or otherworldly, these mysteries have brought all of them together in a shared and wonderful experience. Bill?
I'm going to say that that's kind of entertaining, even though I don't think most of the stuff occurred the way that you reenacted it. But anyway, I would say that was kind of that's kind of fun, especially the two-dimensional kinematics and the too many unknown variables. Hey, that's Dr. Brisegna was not doing so. This is all facts. Okay, they were not fact. They was taking facts. I don't know. Maybe she actually tried to calculate stuff in her head. Oh, she absolutely tried calculating stuff in her head. No question. Anyway, time for an alternative theory. So what the hell actually happened in 2008? Okay, I'll let you do one, Billy, and I'll do the other. Okay. Welcome to the first ever episode of Alternative Theory with Billy D.I. I'm your host, Billy D.I., and here's the first alternative theory. I think maybe perhaps it was military aircraft testing. You know, the easiest conclusion to make. You know, the objects and lights seen were part of an undisclosed military exercise involving either conventional or experimental aircraft. And, you know, this is supported by the fact that the U.S. Air Force admitted to conducting F-16 training flights in the area after initially denying involvement. I mean, it could just be military aircraft testing.
Could be.
Pros and alternative theories. All right, my turn. I propose an atmospheric optical phenomenon. And optical illusions caused by atmospheric conditions such as temperature inversions could explain the sighting. These temperature inversions can bend light over long distances and create mirages or even distort the appearance of objects in the sky, leading to misinterpretations of natural lights. Oh, I'm gonna say atmospheric phenomena. Billy, what do you think? Billy? Well, okay, that's a perfectly valid alternative theory. Okay, how about this one? Maybe it was commercial aircraft misidentification. Now, the lights and the movement of so could be misidentified in commercial aircraft. And, you know, given the air traffic patterns over Texas, lights from high-altitude planes could be seen or mistaken for unexplained aerial phenomena, especially when viewed from angles that make the flight paths appear unusual. And this has been another episode of Alternative. Okay. Not an episode. I'll propose the final alternative theory to the UFO event in Stevensville in 2008. Psychological and social factors. Now, social influences and the psychological effects of UFO culture can heighten perceptions or encounters. The spread of initial reports could have influenced others to interpret ambiguous aerial phenomena as potentially extraterrestrial or unexplained, a phenomenon known as mass suggestion. So I propose mass suggestion. Maybe too many people were watching War of the Worlds, as we saw in this documentary. They mentioned War of the Worlds often, and could just be that. So I propose mass suggestion. Well, that's definitely an alternative theory. So anyway, this has been another exciting episode of Alternative Theories with Billy D.I. Again, this is not an episode, just a segment. Damn it, Billy. Anyway, any last words, Billy? No, thank you, and it's glad to be back, and let's do it again! Indeed, and I think that is going to be it for yet another exciting episode of Rick's Horror Review Show, Rick's Radar Horror Documentary Review Show. If for some reason you still find yourself here listening to me ramble on
on, and I appreciate you being here. You have not listened to any of our other episodes, go check out the episode on the Pascagoula alien abduction. If you like our improv, if you like any of the crazy shit that we do around here, why don't you give us an old like and then subscribe and share or subscribe and share and do all of those social stuff that I know you want to do. I know you want to subscribe to this shit, and I know you want to share it, and you cannot wait, but you're waiting for me to finish and shut my mouth before you subscribe and you share it. But anyway, thank you so much for joining us on another exciting episode. We'll catch you again next time.